can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well, for many years, Doug Hawkins, who we've spoken to earlier, and Ivan's here. He's sitting over there off mic, and Susan Stanley OAM is over here. For many years, I've been wanting to speak to this man, not because, well, yes, because he probably holds the destiny of many hopeful sides and AFL fans in his brain or his hand at any stage of an AFL season. And when I introduce and tell you who he is, you'll understand what that convoluted statement means. This is sitting in front of us, and next to you, Doug, and Ivan, and Sue, is Michael Christian, not the Michael Christian from Tasmania, who is head...
Hey, are you sure you've got the right Michael Christian?
MichaelChristianMenswear.com. I rang this man, Michael Christian, up one day, and I said, "Hey, Mick, I said, the hats that you're printing with good, you cannot be serious on them. I said, if you could just send us over the design of what they look like." And he said, "Hello?" I said, "What do you mean, hello?" I said, "Is this you, Mick?" He said, "Yep." This went on for 5 minutes. I said, "I think you've got the wrong Michael Christian." I said, "Holy shit, man."
Well, Doug, I mean, the interesting thing was that, like, Sam and I, of course, worked at Triple M for nearly 10 years together, and he promised me 20 years ago a game of golf, and he rang out of the blue. Sam Newman came up on the phone, and I thought, finally, after 20 years, he's ringing me for a game of golf. But it was the wrong Michael Christian.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it.
That's right. So
you did intend for me to be here, not... Yeah. That's a good start.
He'll be chortling the other Michael Christian. He listens in Tasmania. Tasmania. Now, before I get on to you, I don't know if you seen the new jumper. What?
It's a very good design, Sam.
It's a shocking design. What? Picture of the map of Tassie on the front of the jumper.
What's wrong with the map of Tassie?
Generally speaking, nothing's wrong with the map of Tassie, Doug, but you'd be very hard-pressed to find a map of Tassie on anyone these days. Usually it's just a bare landing strip. But beside that, how unimaginative is it to put the picture of the state on the front of your jumper, for heaven's sake? Anyhow, we
landing strip. Can you think of
landing? Well, it used to, I tell you, when we were around, I've said this before. When we were around, it used to be a bush, and then it became a landing strip, and then it became nude. And now, if you lift someone's dress up, you might see a dick there.
Are we on air, Samson?
Yeah, no, we're here. So, anyhow, I don't want to embarrass Michael Christian, who has an official job at the AFL. So we'll just disregard all that.
I can't associate myself with this stuff.
Disregard that previous conversation. We're not trying to have Michael come in here and be part of a grubby sort of conversation, because he's a very revered man. And as I said, probably holds the destiny of a lot of clubs' successes in his hand. Now, what I want to say to everyone is that Michael Christian is the sole adjudicator of the match review panel, and he makes decisions that can affect people's lives and teams' fortunes. But let's just start off who he is. He's played 131 games for Collingwood. He played in the 1990... Tell us of any of his wrongs, Mick. Yep. And the 1990 Premiership team, successful Premiership team. He's been on radio shows.
Is there any other... Is there an unsuccessful Premiership team?
That's a good point. But if you play in a... if you play in a premiership, you don't necessarily win the premiership, do you?
No, you play in the grand final and you win the premiership, you're successful, aren't you? If you win the premiership, you win the premiership. Anyway, yeah, we digress.
Don't make it confusing. Yeah.
No, I think you might have me on a technicality that you are correct.
successful.
If you play in a grand final for a premiership, are you playing in a premiership?
If you run second, you don't win.
Right. Well, no, that's that is factually correct, Doug. If you run second, you don't.
That is a fact. So you run second, yeah.
So he played in a premiership in 1990, and he's been on several. We might canvass these, but there's bigger fish to fry. He's been on several sports programs on the radio and the television. He was on with. He was on 927 Sport, I think, with Angela Pippas.
Yeah, there was a number of hosts there. We had we were talking off air, Doug, Anthony Mithen, great mate of mine, and Tony Jones, toasted with TJ. Angela, who was fantastic, and the great Mickey McGuan, who's a great mate of yours, Dougie, as well.
Yeah, great man. Great footy brain, Mick.
Oh,
None better.
Humble, yeah.
This is a segue, Michael, into asking how you got into what you do now. But it's interesting. Then you did the fifth quarter, which was a review show.
Yeah.
From 2004 to 2007. Did you have a penchant, I think is the word, for doing media work, was this a stepping stone to bigger things?
Well, I started. I actually come from Western Australia, and I played 6 years with a club over there called East Perth. And in those days, you weren't allowed to move to Victoria until you were 23 because the young players were being poached by the Victorian clubs. Anyway, long story. So I played 6 years in Perth, came to Collingwood, but then started work, just transferred to my work. I'm a chartered accounting background and worked in stockbroking. And then I got into the media, Sam. And I worked for 10 years with Channel 10. With Dave Barham.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, good. That's
and
good.
Yep. Just a mic adjustment there. And with Channel 10, yep. Dave Barham was fantastic.
Yes, he was.
And got me involved there. And as part of that 10 years at Channel 10, when we covered the footy, we had the fifth quarter with Andy Maher. And we'd sit there and watch the footy on a Saturday night and do a half-hour show at the end of the night. It was a lot of fun.
So you enjoyed being in the media, or did you find it time-consuming? Was this a thing that you wanted to do, or you just thrust into it?
No, I had, as I say, I was chartered accounting, then stockbroking until the late 90s, and then got the opportunity to work initially in radio commentating football at the ABC, and then got hired by Triple M, and that's when we worked together at Triple M. So I commentating with Triple M, and then the offer came from Channel 10. So, I loved it.
You were calling, Mick, weren't you? You weren't making special comments. You were calling the footy, and that's something you always wanted to do, call the game?
Yeah, loved it.
You loved calling the game? And
I was very good too, don't you think, Sam?
You were very good.
I was very good, don't you think?
Yes, from memory, you were exceptional.
Thank you.
But my memory's never been good.
I worked with you,
I worked at Triple
M with you Sam.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, back in the early days.
They were the great days, the footy show was
Juggernaut, and part of the footy show Juggernaut was Triple M through Triple M Eddie. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got here The Final Siren. Is that another show you're on, or have you
mentioned that? Yeah, that was another review show. That was another review show.
On which station? You've been to more stations than the Spirit of Progress.
Exactly. It was a Telstra inspired show, actually.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, a bit of a forerunner to what you're doing here, Sam, with your podcast.
I see. Mm. Well, there we are. That's just a small snapshot of what gives this man, Michael Christian, the credentials to be probably one of the most influential people in AFL football, Doug. What do you reckon?
Well, no, Sam, it was interesting to hear what Christo was saying about, just before we go into stuff, Sam, about that, the 1990 stuff at Collingwood. Christo, how big was that?
I mean, that was good, Doug.
When you smashed a drought. I mean, it was a drought for about 60 years or something. How big was it? Just quickly, Sam, on that, the 1990.
Yeah, no, it was a very special time. And, you know, it was...
late Darren Mullane was
late
a part
Darren
of
Mullane,
that.
Shorey
and Mickey and all those guys. Oh, Banksy, all great characters.
Yeah, no, that was it was a great time. And, you know, legendary for...
coach.
For Darren Mullane, the coach. Yeah, it was incredible.
How'd you get on with the coach?
I got on very well with the coach. Mm. Yeah, I got on well with the coach. I remember him I remember him grand final. And look, you obviously, both of you played a lot of football, but...
We played a lot of football.
When the coach... Can you remember what coach
Lee Matthews,
say
of course.
Three-quarter time and before game? It's a bit of a haze, but I do remember Lee saying before the grand final, everyone was obviously up and about, and I remember him saying, no matter what happens, the sun's going to come up tomorrow, it'll be a new day. So don't...
profound.
Don't get too...
I'm serious.
Yeah, because everyone was a bit up and about and a bit getting over the top, and it was a very calming and very basic and simple thing to say, and very profound thing to say, Sam, but it settled everyone's nerves and away we went.
Anyone ever say that to you at Footscray, Doug?
come up.
No matter what happens, the sun will come up tomorrow. And you thought, holy shit, what does that mean? And it's a bit like Mick Malthouse said, the earth is slow and the ox is patient or something. You ever heard him say that?
Yeah, and if you bleed, we all bleed, he said.
A bit pundit?
He said we all bleed. We all bleed. When we
men
get
and
cut.
Women alike. Now, all of us, I think you did say that covers everyone. Even the 79 bleed, genders that are still...
Someone sung a song called Only Women Bleed. Who was that? That was...
not sure anyone...
Wasn't Gary Glitter, was it?
Not sure anyone
sang... You're on your own here, Doug.
Who was that?
Yeah.
Only Women Bleed. There's a song there.
Yeah.
Sue? Yeah, thanks.
What?
Alice Cooper. He's a weed cat, wasn't he, Alice?
If he sang a song like that, he is. Now, Michael, so when you played football, yes. this is a clumsy way of getting into asking you about your job, your vocation with the AFL. Mm. Did you ever belt anyone? Did you ever get belted? Did you know when people were fair dinkum? Did you ever try and get out of whatever you did at a tribunal? Did you back people up who had hit or done something to you at a tribunal? And were you generally honest, or did you try and get people off? Because you probably have to decide all those things when you look. I don't know what your charter is. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute.
Yep, good.
But you would have to. You could only do this job, you could only do this job unless you'd been part of playing the game. I would suggest. I know people say you don't have to have played the game to comment on it or be part of it, but I would say it is a necessity to have played the game to understand the psyche. Of what you have to make decisions on. Is that fair comment?
Yes, it is. I think it is, yeah. I feel like it's a role where to have been in the cut and thrust of the moment and trying to understand what players are going through, and I've been out of the game a long time now, but I still pride myself on trying to understand. And at the end of the day, I've got a set of guidelines that I abide by, but I also, put my hand on my heart and try and do the right thing. And with that background of knowing that I understand what it's like to be out there in the cut and thrust of the moment.
What's it like, Chris, though, when you get a magpie come up, stunt something, and you've got to assess it and judge on it and make a decision? Is that sometimes a bit tricky for you?
No, it's not, Doug. I mean, it's...
The heart's obviously magpie.
Well, look, I play for the club.
I know you've got a job to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I play for the club, but that role, the role is about obviously being impartial, and I like to think that, my integrity and I judge, doesn't matter what colour of jumper anyone's wearing, what their name is, it's about the action.
I would absolutely, but don't know you very well, but I'd say that is absolutely a fair statement. You say you have a set of guidelines to adhere to. Now, this is what intrigues people. Who gives you the guidelines? How stringently does the people who give you the guidelines, I presume that's the people who run the AFL, ask you to adhere to them? And when can you make a decision based on what you think is right and say, no, I'm not accepting that particular guideline. This is what I think. This is my job. And I think this is what should happen.
It's worth just going back over history and talking about, I mean, when you played, Doug and Sam, and even when I did, there was a tribunal. So the umpire would report you and you would go to a tribunal. And there was no guidelines. There were three people potentially sitting there, or even one person at different times, and they would say 2 weeks, 4 weeks. There was no transparency. There was no understanding from a public standpoint and a media standpoint about exactly why is that 2 weeks and why is that 4 weeks. So what and I'm giving a bit of a history lesson here, but Adrian Anderson was appointed as head of football some time ago. And what Adrian did was revolutionary in a sense, because he changed from being almost like a stab in the dark, with all due respect to those previous tribunal people, to a system whereby there were certain categories for every conceivable sort of action that you could do on a football field. And then, so that was, and I think what that was revolutionary at the time, but what's happened since then is it's now drifted back to where there is some interpretational capability that I have. And so from being no transparency to be too much transparent, as in trying to tick boxes and trying to understand and trying to fit every type of incident into a particular category, it's now drifted back probably halfway between the two, so that there is some interpretation that I can overlay in terms of making decisions.
So we the AFL, the competition, us, we tried to throw the baby out with the bathwater by being so pedantic and so driven by the guidelines that it became... I was a great critic of that, because I always said that we should, or people like you should, judge cases on their merits.
Yes.
But judging them on the merits might be outside, and we'll just do the specific case now of Mr. Maynard and Mr. Brayshaw.
Yes.
Last year, where it appeared that while Mr. Brayshaw received quite a severe knock and was rendered unconscious, did you not put your reputation and your position on the line by saying, I've looked at this and I disagree with the guidelines I've been given? Or is that taken that wrong?
Yeah, no, it's taken it wrong.
Everything was wrong then, was I said?
No.
No, I'm interested and I'm not being flippant, I'm just interested.
And that's why I'll explain the system. So, again, without sort of going back too far, 8 years ago, we had a panel of four people. Steve Hocking was appointed head of football at the AFL, and he thought the consistency would be better if there was one person. So I was approached and I accepted the role as that
2017.
Person. Correct. But what the process within the AFL, I'm part of the AFL, so I make a decision. I then report and have a discussion with the head of football and the head of legal, and I make a recommendation as to exactly what I think the charge should be. We have a discussion and we come to a unanimous decision about what a decision should look like and what a decision should be. Now, the Maynard one was an interesting one because in terms of the guidelines, I felt that there was... enough there in terms of look, I don't want to get into too specifics.
It was a footy act, but Chris. It was a footy act.
But from what you could see, particularly, and I don't want, as I say, I don't want to get into too specifics. But he jumped to smother. He wasn't on the same line as Brayshaw, and it was very unfortunate that he came down and obviously made a collision with Angus, and we know what happened from there. So. We came to a decision.
We?
As in head of football and head of legal at the AFL, and we came to a decision that the case should go to an independent tribunal to be heard.
And rightly so, but yeah. if you had a difference of what you thought the incident was about as opposed to the people that you when I say you, the AFL people who were against you, there was some dispute about, and you did you not, Michael, say, now look, I see this way, and I'm sticking by that, and if you want my job, you can have it.
No. It wasn't quite that extent. The guidelines from my perspective, I didn't think that there should be a charge. But in discussions with the AFL, we got to the point where we thought, and I agreed with the fact that it should be heard by an independent tribunal. The process with the MRO is that I make a decision. I go to the head of football and head of legal. We release the decision.
Because that's a big thing, the legal, isn't it? The litigious nature of what's going on in the game at the minute must be taken into account.
Correct. And so we get to that stage, and then a decision's made, and then players can then, if they feel aggrieved, and they can go and elect to go to a tribunal. In this particular case, we thought that given the entirety of the concussion and the talk about whole...
The litigious side of it all, yeah.
We thought it was best... We all agreed that it would be best heard at an independent tribunal so that there was transparency around the decision.
So to Doug's point about being a Collingwood player and you being a Collingwood man and bias and...
Big finals.
I absolutely take your point that you would have nothing to do with that, but that would probably be the chat around the rank and file. Oh, it's a Collingwood man and he played for Collingwood. So you have to put up with all this. I know that the amount of angst and people who would go you out on the street, and I know it's part of the job and you probably don't love it, but you probably put up with it because it is a very tough thing to do. But how do you decide? Do you have a lot of gophers, if you like? Do you have people who look at all the games, and you don't sit there and watch every game, and they just put suggestions up for you to look at? Is that how the process works? And you have to, you get a whole little list of things, and they say, "Oh, you better look at player so and so in this game at the 25-minute mark." How do you actually work out who goes up?
So we have a group of people who have been educated that watch every game, and they basically time code any incident that occurs during a game. On average, there would be 20 incidents per game that are time coded.
Wow. Over the round. No, 20 a game.
Per game.
Yes. Yes.
Correct.
Per game. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so 180.
Wow.
Per week.
And you have...
Yeah. Are you full-time, Chris? Are you full-time?
No. So...
Go on, yeah.
So... God. And then we also, I've got a couple of people that support me, do a terrific job. Of the 20, so what we're doing is we're capturing everything. And there, of the 20, there might be 15, 13, 14, 15 that incidents that are just normal cut and thrust collisions that occur in the course of a game that are not reportable. And so that list is trimmed down to probably six or seven, and then that list comes to me. So I look at, you know, somewhere between 50 and 60 incidents per week. And then I make...
You go into the AFL and you have an office and you have the screens and you have to really, really eyeball...
Yeah.
Because it's pretty important at the end of the day, isn't it?
Correct. So what happens once those incidents are time-coded, the incident is cut from every camera angle. So there's normally between 8 and 12 cameras at a game. So every angle of that incident is then edited into a 3-minute clip that comes to me. So I can get to see every angle that is available from every camera.
And yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, and then I also get a separate clip which is what we call an aftermath clip, which follows, a camera follows the person that might be injured.
Oh, yeah.
So I can understand exactly what that player's done for a minute or two after a particular incident.
Just revisit it, Sam. Christo, that the Maynard hit on young Brayshaw.
Yeah.
I called it a footy act.
Yeah.
To smother the football, he's got to leave the ground. If he leaves his feet on the ground, he's not going to touch the footy.
Mm.
And when you jump off the ground, to smother the... That's his first intention. We could all see that.
Mm.
And you can't change in mid-flight. You cannot change in mid-flight. Mm. He's going to make contact. And no disrespect to the boy Brayshaw. If it was a Viney or a Oliver, I reckon they get up and play again. Has that rule now, Christo, been changed by the AFL? If you leave the ground and make contact through this Brayshaw Maynard, you're gone? Does that sound right?
If I may, to not that he needs defending, Doug, but he is not. He doesn't make the rules. I presume there's a guideline of what the rules are. And if the rule is that if you leave the ground and collect someone, that is against the rules. That's probably what he has to make a decision on, not whether he agrees with the rule or not. It's just that the guidelines he's given, I presume, Michael, am I?
Yeah, no, that's
not
right.
Defending
Sam.
You, but
so there's been a slight tweak this year, and look, it talks about being if you leap off the ground to try and smother, and it's foreseeable that you are going to make
contact
then. It might be
you're gone.
A charge. It might be. No, it's
not actually gone?
No, it's not automatic. Okay. Doug. It's not automatic. I mean, each and this is this. It does make me smile when people. I remember when I first took the job, someone said, "It's very simple. All you have to be is be consistent." And I said, "Well, that's great, but not any two incidents are the same.
No.
They're not."
No, they're not.
So, you know, to hypothesise about different things and would this have been, you know, it's very difficult because not two incidents are the same and that's the challenge of the role.
So does your experience of playing the game, actually physically playing and playing in a premiership in 1990, that is paramount to knowing the psyche, I'm sure, of what goes on in a player's mind?
I think so.
Because, you know, you can tell if they stage or if they... giving too much time on the ground and writhing around in agony. You can't be swayed, and you can only gauge that by actually having played the game, I think.
I think so. I think so. Yeah, I agree with that. And Sam, you asked a question earlier and we got lost in the translation and I didn't get to answer it, but you asked whether I'd been suspended before, and I had been suspended in my time. But I also had a very anxious moment because in the 1990 qualifying final, I was reported.
Oh, wow.
And went up to the tribunal, and Neil Bussey was head of the tribunal.
For doing what?
I allegedly forearmed Peter Sumich in the head, allegedly.
Mm.
And
did you?
Of course. Well, no, you wouldn't go up. Whether it was an accident
or not. Did you rank him or not?
It was before video.
Yeah.
And so it was reported. Anyway, as it turned out, I wasn't suspended, and luckily I wasn't, because it was the next the grand final. So otherwise I would have missed the grand final. That would have been a
So the umpire reported you?
Yes.
Just the field umpire, no review, match review panel? Just
no, there was no panel
and,
or no video
no,
review in
video
those
evidence
days.
And the person's Mr. Sumich.
He
backed you? Did he say no, he hit me? Or did he say no, nothing, it was just a nothing? Did he back you?
Yes.
Okay, and so you probably got away with one. Because you obviously belted him, or you... Well, you obviously belted him, whether it's an accident or not, you obviously belted him.
It happens, it happens. It's a contact.
Yes, maybe accidental, but you belted him.
Smashed him.
No,
he did. He smashed him with an elbow.
Well, accidentally, Doug.
I'm not sure about that.
No, he said that.
Oh, did he say that?
Yeah, accidental.
Hey, Sam, just going back, Chris, though.
Yeah.
This is a fair enigma question to you.
Yeah.
If a player gets hit...
Yes.
And he's the one that's been obviously whacked. If he's not knocked out or he's okay, do you take it into account that situation? If a player's KO'd, carried off the ground, or I get up and take my kick and...
The severity of it.
Yeah. Is that a fair question to
you? Yes, it is. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of what I do, I look at what we call conduct. So the conduct of any particular action, whether it's careless, whether it's nothing, whether it's careless or whether it's intentional. If it's not careless or it's not intentional, I don't look at the impact. It's irrelevant.
You don't worry about the injury to the player if it's not careless.
If it's not careless or it's not intentional, there's no need for me to look at impact, because there's no report that's been or reportable offence that has occurred. If an action or conduct is careless or intentional, then impact is important. So in terms of impact, I look at a number of things. I look at the visual look of the impact. So is it just me touching you or bumping into you? I look at the medical report, which is
like a jaw or...
Yep. I look at the impact on the player. And there's no particular weight given to any of those particular aspects. It's all just put in the melting pot in my head, and I come up with what I think's fair and right in terms of what is the correct grading for impact. And so impact can be low, medium, high, and severe.
Yep.
How stressful, this is the other side of it, how stressful is it for your family? You've got kids, I suppose.
Yeah, I have.
How stressful is it for your everyday life of what you do being harangued, not by people like us because we're just asking you the Dorothy Dix questions, but how stressful is this job and why do you do it? And I presume it's a professional engagement and you get rewarded handsomely for it, and rightly so.
Oh, handsomely, I'm not
well,
sure.
Well, anyhow,
yeah,
I'm not...
Yeah,
yeah. Voluntary,
isn't it, Mick?
Yeah, voluntary,
is it voluntary, sir?
Well, I hope not.
Look, it's...
It's not voluntary.
I understand, Sam.
It's not voluntary.
Sorry, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
No.
Turn it up.
No, it's not voluntary.
I hope there's a big stipend involved.
He gets a big buck, sir, remember that?
Yeah.
So,
How much do you get?
Just something around. Yeah. 300, 250? Go on. Give us a little bit of a run.
So...
okay, you're not going to. All
no,
right.
No, we won't go there. We won't go there.
All right, go on.
Yeah, look, I understand, and I went into this with eyes wide open, Sam, about the fact that people are very passionate about their clubs and people are very passionate about their players, and they form opinions based on that allegiance. So I get that. And it is difficult, and it's difficult for my kids. The kids are a bit older now. My oldest is 25, in fact, 25 yesterday. Happy birthday, Sasha. And my youngest...
Yeah, happy birthday.
And my youngest is 16. And look, they do get... Particularly at school, as they get older, it's, you know, they can handle themselves.
Yep.
Okay. But yeah, it is a little concerning, but you know, they're it comes with the territory.
Have you been threatened by lowlifes? I mean, there's plenty out there. Have you ever had threats and about decisions and been intimidated by people?
No one's ever done it to my face. No one's ever been to my face.
No.
But, and I try, not so much letters, but I mean, I've become aware of social media posts, etc., that are not very nice. As a consequence, I try not to
look at it.
And it's not easy. And I try not to listen to a lot of media and just because, if you know, it does your head in.
Yeah. So on that, Michael. Yeah. So there's a lot of so-called experts, us guys and girls, yeah, that have played. I'm going to get onto the women in a minute. I want to ask you a serious question, and I know the context with which I'll ask it, so I'm prepared for the blowback. But it's not meant to be for that reason. Mm. But there's all the experts, the ex-players and the commentators and that, they give an opinion. They say, well, how could you do this and how could you do that? It's just something you've got to handle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's impossible in a sense, because...
Does anyone ever sway you to change your opinion, people you respect, like ex-coaches and ex-players and great players?
No, I try not to listen. I try and watch as little television. But what tends to happen is I've got a group of, you know, friends, and I got a text just this week, you know, someone was talking about it on radio and criticising. But look, I understand that it's
you ring them and have a crack at them.
No, I don't.
Let it ride.
What's the point of that? I mean,
what's
the point? But look, you know, it's.
I would.
But it's
no,
only
I wouldn't cop it. If it's the crack of me, they get it back.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's your opinion and their opinion.
And that's right. And you know, in the media, and you talk about the experts, and there's lots of them. The MRO decision is a very easy target, and I know when I was in media, and we were grappling to find something to talk about before I was involved. We just hone in on the MRO decision or the tribunal decision, and it's easy fodder. It's an easy pick off, you know, because if you've got a quiet news day, it's something you can just gravitate to, because you know everyone's got an opinion, and you'll have two very respected football media personalities, and they'll have a different opinion about a particular incident.
What's the most controversial decision you've been involved in that has actually changed the course of maybe the year's fortunes of a side or a game or a coming game? It can't affect the game that's just gone because you haven't seen the incident. But what's the most controversial decision you've been involved with, do you think?
Wow.
Well... there's plenty of them, I suppose, the press hang on the verdict of the tribunal after you've put them up.
Yeah, look, and I think one of the other really things that drives that, Sam, is the name. Like if it's a Nathan Fife or it's a...
Marcus Bontempelli.
Marcus Bontempelli, and particularly those that are in contention for a Brownlow medal.
Yep.
It amplifies the scrutiny and the decision. Mate, Patrick Dangerfield is another one.
It's only human, Michael. It must come into your consideration, or does it not?
No, look, I like to think it doesn't, Sam. I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, it doesn't matter about the name. It doesn't matter about the jumper. But now that I've mentioned the Dangerfield name, there was one incident going back a number of years. I can't actually remember what year it was. It was Patrick Dangerfield tackled Sean Burgoyne, and it preempted a rule change around tackling, and it was almost a bit of a catalyst for being harder on tackles, the real dump, slinging tackle where players' heads hit the ground. And the way the rules were written at the time... I fined Patrick Dangerfield for the incident and graded it as it was careless, but low impact was the key determinant, and that prompted a lot of media scrutiny, and it also prompted at the end of the year a tightening up of tackles and the way you could tackle, and I think that was really important in terms of being able to protect the head better. And I think what we've done over my time, and I say we because it's the AFL in terms of tightening the guidelines, but it has helped to make the game safer from a tackling standpoint. And, you know, when you guys played I played, you know, the real issue was the raised forearm, raised elbow. That was the game... got rid of that effectively. Yes, there's the odd one. Then the next big one was the bumped shoulder to head, And I think we now have got everyone on board. When Jimmy Webster bumped Jai Simkin in the pre-season, you know, most people, including football media, football public, understood that you cannot do that. You cannot bump shoulder to head in today's environment. And that's been a 10-year education program for people to make the game safer. And we're similarly going on a similar track with tackling.
Are we allowed to talk about something fresh, Sam? To Chris, pardon, Doug? Are we able to talk about something fresh from the tribunal?
No. Keep it just... What do you mean? We're talking anything about, you like.
Well, just, Chris, just now, the boy from Hawthorn. Is it Sicily?
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to comment on something that's now been changed? Like, he got a week. Is that you who gave him
correct.
A week?
Correct.
You gave him a week for kicking.
I did.
And it got overturned.
Correct.
Why did it get overturned when you give a week? And we clearly saw there was contact made by the foot.
That's an extremely good question. Why'd you ask, could we ask him something fresh? That's an extremely good question, Doug.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
So, on a serious note, Sam, you saw the contact by the...
That's why I didn't haven't asked him about it.
Well, this has just happened last night.
Yeah, correct.
Tell us a bit about it. You gave him a week and they overruled it.
Yeah. So I determined that it was in... We talked earlier about conduct.
Yeah.
So it was an intentional action and I felt that it had... the potential to cause a more serious injury than what it did, and that's one of the great innovations with the guidelines. And we're talking earlier, Sam, about the interpretive nature. There is, if you do something that's a horrid act, but the player is not injured, I've got the capacity under a potential to cause. Could that action have caused potentially a more serious injury? I've got the capacity to scale up the impact to account for that. And this was a case in point, whereas I thought that the kick could have caused a more serious injury. And every player has the right to go to the tribunal. And Hawthorn and James Sicily took that option. They went to the tribunal. And with all the evidence and with witnesses and with everything around that, they were able to prove that that kick wouldn't have caused a more serious injury. And therefore, they downgraded the impact from medium to low. And the suspension was downgraded to a fine.
On the back of Doug asking this very fresh question, which I'm glad you did that piss you off that they went against you? You must have thought, hang on a minute, what's the point of asking me if you're going to, what's the point of my role if you're going to do that?
No, I don't feel like that at all, Sam. I get to make a judgment call and a determination off a video. What a tribunal setting is witnesses, explanations, and what's going through the players' minds. You know, we have biomechanists that are called in that provide evidence. We've got, you know, experts from all different facets. Some of these tribunal cases go for 2 and 3 hours with all the evidence. I'm making a judgment call off a video and doing what I think is and making the call that I think is appropriate, which is supported by the AFL, and the opportunity to go to a tribunal to hear from witnesses, to hear from biomechanists who have all the transparency.
All the bullshit.
They sometimes come up with a different outcome based on all that evidence.
So when I say at the intro that you're the AFL's sole adjudicator, you're not the sole adjudicator. You adjudicate that someone should go up and someone else can come over the top and
at a tribunal, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, correct. So I mean the way the AFL has structured it is that I'm the initial point. So the decision is made off at that level, at the MRO level, and then the players and the clubs have a right then to go to a tribunal and hear their case with witnesses and whatever witnesses they'd like to call and present any evidence of what they'd like to call. Now, if they then fail, or indeed, and it happened last year with, or a couple of years ago with Toby Green, if the club feel that the tribunal has made a mistake, and there are conditions around it, they can then go to appeal. And similarly, the AFL, if they feel the tribunal has not represented what they think should have been done, the AFL can go to appeal as well.
So there's a lot of, seems to be, I might have got this out of context, Doug, but there seems to be a lot of chat that the game's being softened down and it's a tough game, but it's being softened down from what it was, and probably that's a good thing. Getting to the stage where you can be charged with even bumping too hard. You said that if you go in and bump someone legally and hurt them, that used to be what we were told to do. See if you can hit someone as hard as you can within the rules. But now, in this day and age we live in, you can get charged with actually too much aggression, can't you?
Oh, no, well, not necessarily, Sam. No.
As long as you don't hit the head.
Yeah,
no, I can hit you down the broad, front and, yeah. and shirt front.
No, I don't think that's right.
You can't shirt front, with great respect.
I think that if you hit someone far too hard, the
flowers have arrived, Sam.
What's that?
The flowers have arrived.
Yeah, here they are. There it is. So Chris, don't you?
I don't know.
So, what I said, Sam, is Christo, I can the old-fashioned shirt front. I can still do that as long as I don't hit the head.
The game allows for you to tackle. The game allows for you to bump,
but not too hard.
But you must avoid bumping shoulder to head.
No, of course you must, because that's against the rules.
Yeah.
But I have.
Can you give me one example of where?
A game and a person being sprung or penalised for tackling too hard?
Or no? Bumping. I thought you were talking about bumping. Were you talking about tackling?
Tackling, bumping. As long as it's in the rules, they said there has been decisions given where there was an excess of force applied in the circumstances. It wasn't necessary to hit someone that hard.
The rules and the guidelines are based predominantly around protecting the head.
Yes.
So if you elect to bump and you bump someone in the head, then that will be a lack of duty of care and therefore a charge. But if you bump someone shoulder to shoulder, then that's within the rule, within 5 metres of the ball, within the vicinity of the ball, then the game allows that. And the same with tackling. If you tackle
someone and drop them to the ground hard.
I'll give you an example of last week.
Yes.
There was a tackle on Callan Ward of the Giants.
Yeah, Giants.
Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
So do you recall what happened to him?
He got slung.
Well, he was taken to ground by Bo McQuarrie of Collingwood, and he landed on his shoulder.
Oh, yes, of course.
And he had to go off, and he's got...
Well, this is a very good. I have no idea. I don't watch it, but that's a very good case in point. He had quite a bad.
I'm not sure of where it ended up, but it was certainly a bad shoulder injury.
So he was slung, tackled legitimately.
He was driven legitimately to the ground, and hurt his shoulder.
Yep.
There was no head impact.
No. Was a free kick paid?
No.
So it was
and there was no charge.
What did you bring that up for, Doug?
You asked the question, Sam, about excessive. You were talking about excessive force and that you can't use excessive force.
No, I'm saying I've seen decisions given where the tackle has been given and excess force was used when it wasn't necessary. Absolutely.
And that's in those situations, it's concerning protecting the head. So if there's...
No.
If,
Yeah, well, I'm with you about protecting the head.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but I'm just not...
I reckon they've softened the game down so that in this day and age we live in and trying to get kids to play football and not soccer, that the tackling, the severity of the tackling, even if it's legitimate, is frowned upon.
No.
I don't agree with that.
I mean,
fair enough.
And that's why I gave the example of Bo McQuarrie and and Callum Ward. I mean, that was a hard, strong tackle that did cause an injury.
Yep.
But look, as I say, the two things that are most difficult for me are bumping and tackling, because the game allows it.
Yep.
But players must show a duty of care when they're bumping and must show a duty of care when they're tackling.
Sam, Christo, if I was an AFL coach now, if I was, I would instruct my players now not to bump, because the game is now, as we know and everybody knows, is so quick. In our day, Sam, in our day in the 70s and 80s and late 60s, you could line someone up, Christo, and you can hit them down the middle, you won't make contact. But now the game is that quick. They move like, you know, you've got that second or two movement and you make contact, as you said, Christo, to the head, you're gone. You're gone. I don't reckon you bump anymore. I reckon the bump's gone. I think that because of the pace of the game, and if you make contact and head, you're shot. Is that fair?
That's an observation, Doug, and a very fair one too. And if you were a coach and wouldn't allow bumping, I would like to know how long you'd last in the job.
How long do you reckon it'll last?
And I signalled this earlier. I know what I'm saying. And they have a terrific part in the game. Could a woman do your job?
Yes.
And if a woman was appointed to do your job, I reckon all hell would break loose. And you'll say, why? And I'm not sure that I can give you, I'm not sure that I can give you the answer. But it would probably be that you have to have been out in the field of endeavour. And I know there's plenty of great women footballers that are playing who've been in the field of endeavour. But I honestly don't think it's the same. I know, and I know I'll get...
Do you have the same view with commentators and...
No, I don't, because to commentate on a piece of play, anyone can do that. I mean, any competent person can do that. Christian gets the ball, he hand passes it to Hawkins, he kicks it down to Newman, that was a good bit of play. That is just looking at the game and just describing it to the people listening or watching. As I said earlier, I think it is an integral part of being in the game and having played it at that level that gives you the psyche to understand what's going on, even though you've got all your helpers and videos and rules and people advising you. I think if a woman was made head of AFL, the sole adjudicator, I don't think it would go over well with the public. And you think I'm against women? I'm not at all.
No, I know you're not against women, Sam. I know that.
I'm a savage heterosexual. Let me tell you that.
I know that.
So you say a woman could do your job. Do you think that's likely to happen in the name of diversity, inclusion, and equity? The three letters that run the world today.
Is that a question?
No, it's not really a question, mate, because you've given your answer. You said yes. I don't know. I'll take it on the fact that you say yes, a woman could do your job. And if you do, why don't you give it over to a woman?
Sam don't like women. He loves them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
You're welcome.
Do you enjoy watching the game?
No, he doesn't.
The way it's played today?
Did you hear Doug answer for me?
No, he doesn't. He wouldn't watch one of game in the last the 5 years, Chris. Right.
No, I don't watch the games. I haven't understood
anything. Why don't you watch it?
Thank you, Doug.
Right.
Because I dislike the way it's... It's a great game and people love it and the crowds go up and the ratings and we're the highest... highest spectators per capita of the population in the world. That's a fact. That is a fact. More people go to the football and it sustains the whole country. I do not like the way it's played. I think it's illogical. The chipping around, I just don't think it's logical the way it's played. The games that we look at back in the 80s and even in the 90s where clubs took the game on and... there were stars in the game and there's stars in the game today. But I choose not to go to it. I don't watch it. I'm not actually interested in it.
I remember when we worked together, you know, and this was in a period where it was a very defensive game. Like it was people
That's right.
got numbers behind the ball and you kick out to it was and it was
that resulted in me getting suspended from
correct.
Triple M when I watched correct. Two games when they kicked the ball around, they had more chipping and the bloke said it was a great game. I said, well, you're a fuckwit. And that was the end of my radio career.
But
you're a one.
But
Gary Pert sacked me.
But the,
well, he didn't actually.
But the game today is so. Have you given it a chance? Like the game today is so.
You have to watch the game, Chris, don't you?
I know, but I know I do. But
well,
I
you
actually
love it, don't
enjoy.
You?
I enjoy watching because the way the ball moves, Doug. I mean, you watch it. Do you enjoy
do
it?
Do I watch it?
The way the ball moves and how quickly
it
moves?
I watch every game.
Do you enjoy the way the game's played
today? No,
I
don't. No, I don't.
Or even now, with the way the ball moves so quickly.
Do you reckon they move the ball quickly now?
Oh, absolutely.
What about when we're kicking 10 to 11? They're great games because the scores are close. It's not a good game at all, Michael. You know, I called you Michael.
So I watch.
I called you Michael.
I watch Snatches.
I'm serious.
Snatches of the game. So you say it moves quickly. Well, does it? So someone get the ball in the half back line and they'll hold it and they'll look and then they'll chip it over there and then they'll hold it and they'll I know they're trying to work out the position and where to drive it in and where to get it into.
I wish I hadn't asked this question.
And it goes back, it goes backwards and forwards.
No, we're moving on,
chipping
we?
It and yeah, chipping it on, yeah. And then when a club decides that now's the time to attack, they move it quickly. Yeah. But my God, the stuff up the back. And
how do you know, Sam? You don't watch it.
I said, exactly. I said
that. Well, that was my point. I mean, Sam will stop watching 20 years ago, Doug.
Excuse me. I did say, Michael, I watched Snatches of it. Did I not?
Just then you did, yes.
I mean, it's impossible not to watch Snatches, Doug.
I know.
Let me tell you, there's another meaning of the word snatch, Doug. Snatch means a small portion.
Snatch a jerk. Wait.
No, shut up. Incidentally, I know what we didn't cover.
Yes.
You commentated on the weightlifting at the Commonwealth Games.
No,
how
you
the
never.
Fuck did you get that job?
You did not. Yeah. Is that a paying job, Chris?
Do
of course it was.
Do you guys remember
weightlifting?
Ivan, Daryl Eastlake. Remember Daryl Eastlake?
I love it.
My world of sports.
I modelled myself on Daryl Eastlake. And I'm a bit disappointed you haven't got any of the audio from me commentating.
Well, do us a bit now.
Dean Lukin, when he lifted that high over his head, what did you do then?
Dean Lukin, you know, the challenging part was it was in Delhi. But we...
Fantastic.
But we commentated from Docklands.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we commented.
In the studio.
Yeah, in the studio. And and we didn't know. Like,
give us...
I tried to...
Pump it up.
I tried to pump it up, but I tried.
Recap it. Give us it now.
Oh, dear, it was 15 years ago, Sam.
Who was it? And Dean Lukin steps to the bar. He grasps it between a pair
a
of
monster
hands.
Man.
And here, go on, give us it. Just as we Dean close. Here he goes. This is the Commonwealth Games, 2010.
And Dean Delhi. Lukin gets to the mat. He's up. He's up. Oh, I think he's got it. Dean Lukin. Oh, what a champion. What a legend. Dean Lukin, you're a star.
On that note.
That was great, Chris. That was great, brother.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you. So, I don't know if you do. Did you have to get permission to come in here and do this for the AFL? Because do you do many of these interviews? Or not?
Well,
you do plenty, I suppose.
No, I don't do a lot. No.
He loves you, Sam. That's
no,
why.
He doesn't love me.
He does love you. Don't you, Chris?
I reckon the people who listen to this would be absolutely fascinated as how it works and what the what the whole procedure is about rubbing out their star players or not rubbing them out. So anyhow, mate, we really appreciate you coming in and you're a very good man. And Doug, the best question of all time you said was fantastic about Mr. Sicily. So well done to you.
Thank you, Sam.
Right, and that's
thank you.
Good on you.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Chris. Good thank to see you, brother.
Good to see you, mate. Good to see you all.
I'm hoping around the streets late at night.